must heard it. But we, from the USA and science side, concur with every word of Institute of Race Relations. They did not have any contact with it prior to the presentation today, but what came out from that presentation is exactly what's going on the heart, in the hearts of your smaller and medium-scale family farmers. So it's not as if we are not on the same page. We are exactly on the same page. And the question about the other laws, which actually already covers much of the concerns which this law wants to cover, it is like SPLUMA, it is like PI, it is like the NEMA Act. If those acts were better implemented, a large part of this Concept Act would really not be necessary. And if we cannot implement those, what makes us so sure that we will be able to implement this one, especially given the vagueness in the minister's powers? And I also hear that it's not the intention. You know, this act will still be in place long after all of us are gone. And then no one will remember what the intention was. We must have an act that cannot be misused somewhere in the future. It's not about the intention. It's about the contents and whether this act will really do what we intended it to do. The third issue about the protection of against the encroachment of residential areas and so. In the district where I farm, in the Letaba district, more of than half of our district is actually part of the communal areas. It covers two former homelands. And there's a lot of the farms which have been transferred, both in restitution but also in redistribution, where we saw exactly that. When we wiped our eyes, those were residential areas. And it is as if we just lost grip. There were no more handles on it. And how would you turn it around again? It's too late now. But it should not have happened had we implemented laws which are already in existence. It is not because of a lack of this law that it happened. And anyway, we cannot recover it again. Those will never be farms again. The fourth question was about the subdivision of agricultural land, which can also be addressed through this one. You will know that it often takes a law years and years to get through Parliament and eventually get onto the law books. The same was with this Act on the subdivision of agricultural land. These were heavy debates in Parliament. They wanted to throw chairs at each other in the late 1960s, until in 1970 the Act was passed. And you know how they got to define the principles? They said a piece of land must always be economically viable. It cannot be too small to be economically viable. But what is economically viable? At the time, they looked at the salary of a junior mine worker. And they said, the profit you can make from a farm must not be less than that of a junior mine worker, because that's a proper livelihood. And this is how they originally defined livelihood and the size, the minimum size. So, of course it's outdated. Of course we should relook at livelihood. But it is not this act. We have more or less, and we cannot say for sure, but we estimate that we have around 2.2 million people who farm on the fringes of cities. very urban farmers, pavement farmers, farmers with 50 chickens. But they pay school fees from that. They cook it and they sell it on a street corner. And they make a living off that. So the definition should also cover that. Those are the farmers of tomorrow. Those are the ones who should really be beneficiaries of land reform. Those are the ones who can take agriculture forward. But we, somehow we miss them. They are not on farmland. They are actually on residential and very often on industrial land. The sixth question was about the other acts again, which should cover it, and also in terms of these communal areas. Chair, can I maybe explain that our main purpose as farmers' organizations, whether it is on a local level, on a national level, on an international level, farmers' organizations' biggest job is to influence policies, is to do advocacy. This is why we are all here today. We are trying to influence policy. But to influence policies, we need to have policies. So we must go to members and ask them, what is your interest? What do you want Parliament to hear? What do you want? What do you deem to be in your best interest? And I'm not sitting here for the better good of South Africa. I'm sitting here for the better good of small and medium scale farmers. It's your job to look at society at large. We table the interest of our members. Our members are not the farm workers. They belong to trade unions. Our members are small entrepreneurs. If I sound alarmist, it is because I speak from that farmer who sits on his farm, and I say, I have a leopard killing my calves every night. I cannot shoot it. I need a license. To get a license, I must go to the department. Then I must fill up in a lot of forms, and I must wait. But the leopard has no sympathy for me. He kills a calf every night. And at the end, if it takes 5 or 6 months before I get my permit, or if I never get it, I suffer the loss. I cannot go back to the state and say, look at the losses I've incurred. So we feel very much delivered to bureaucracy. And yes, we fear it because we can do nothing about that. We are trying to reduce red tape as far as we can. If government officials have less tasks on their desk, it's good for us. Because in our experience, it's very hard to get decisions made and to get laws to be implemented, no matter what the intention of those were. And then another thing which I want to clarify from us as occupiers of the rural areas, and I know many of you know this, but we sit with the second and the third generation of people in South Africa who no longer have an uncle or a grandpa on a farm, who lives in cities and who has lost the connection with the land. For us as commercial farmers, as those who are practicing our operations as a profitable business, we have a very special relationship with communal authorities, tribal authorities, the royal houses. It brings a lot of stability into our environment. And I want to quote you an example, James. One morning, I tried to check in my workers on the farm. But they all sit on their scuffings, and no one looks me in the eye, and no one wants to go to work. And I don't know what's wrong yet. I know it does not have to do with the farm. Well, they would have taken up with me. So eventually, one of the supervisors will tell me, last night in the compound, there was a fight. This guy took that guy's wife. Now what can I do about it? Absolutely nothing. Least of all, taking it to the police or to the CCMA. What can I do about it? But it impacts on my business today. I put them in my vehicle and I take them to the Royal House, to the council, because they exercise a kind of discipline which I cannot and which the state cannot. And they solve my problem. And I know if there's a big funeral, they will send a truck to my farm and I will send them the firewood. I know I'll have to slaughter 2 oxen over Christmas and a few goats over Easter. And it brings that stability in the environment which, as an individual farmer, I cannot exercise and the state cannot exercise. And the moment you erode the power of that royal house, you also shake the stability in our area. There where the police and the organs of state fall short, the system provides for it in the areas where we live. Hence, it is important for us that when we consider this kind of legislation, we also strengthen the economy of those areas. If people remain poor in those areas, they go to the cities, and the system gets weaker and weaker. That's why I also say our interest is often a bit different from that of businesses in the agricultural sector, who are mostly seated in big towns or in cities. It's important for us that you also consider that dynamics of the vast rural areas where there are much fewer people and where things are simpler, but where legislation, which does not take it into account, can upset our environment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Paul Dajreka, for the presentation. Honorable members, that was the presentations and responses from both Agribiz by Annelise, as well as Dr. Dajreka. And we come to our break, as we had a marathon of a session this morning. So I believe through Mema Ledu has slaughtered the sheep for us and has gotten fresh produce from farmers and prepared lunch for us. We will utilize this time to stretch our legs and at 1:30, at 12:30, lunch will be served until 1:00. We'll resume again at 1:00. We temporarily on a break.
Thank you. Thank you.